Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Welcome to another segment of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Today's show, we have a great show lined up. We're waiting for our guest to call in. We're having an exclusive interview with Mr. Dick Gregory. We spoke with him less than an hour ago, so I'm not certain if he is hung up. He's in a conference, and he was going to break away from the conference and speak with us from 4 to 6 his time. I'm going to take just a second and try to reach him again. I'm going to go back to some music and I'll be back.
Money, 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 money.
Thank you.
We're still waiting on Mr. Gregory to call in. We do not know what the holdup is. We spoke with him less than an hour ago, confirmed the show, gave him the call-in number, and we're still waiting. And we're not certain. We've called his people. We've called him, and we're not certain what the situation is. We were told that he was heading to a conference and that he would break away from the conference to do the show. And so we're not certain if he will or if he's just delayed. We're just not certain at this point. What I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to some people that's on the phone right now. We're going to talk a little bit about a show we have coming up next week, next weekend, and maybe by that time Mr. Gregory would have made it to a phone and can call us. I'm going to open up the phone lines of Mr. Jim Blackwell and Miss Cherry. We're going to talk about next week's show a little bit and give him a little time to get on the line. Good afternoon, y'all.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Let's talk a little bit about what we're going to talk about next week. Next week's show is all about Paris, Texas, and the DA's office. We're going to talk about some of the convictions that have come out of Paris, Texas, the county of Lamar, under the watch of Gary Young. And there's a lot of people that we understand have been wrongfully convicted down there. Do you all want to talk about some of the cases a little bit?
Well, we can. Can I say, though, that Creola Cotton and Bobby Yates are with me here, too?
Okay. Okay. Hi, Creola Cotton, and hi, Bobby.
Hello.
Bobby did our show last night, and it was a very powerful show. Bobby Yates, a young man that's going to trial in Paris, as a matter of fact, in, a couple of days? Wednesday?
It will be Wednesday. Well, Tuesday he has a motion to withdraw hearing because his attorney says he doesn't want to represent him. So he has that hearing, and the judge may or may not release the attorney. If he doesn't, then the trial will start jury selection on the 23rd.
Okay. Bobby is a young man who is a double amputee. He's had both legs removed. And after Bobby's legs were removed several years later, I think it was about 7 years later, an infection took over his body. And they had to remove his penis due to the infection or it would have killed him. And now Lamar County is trying to charge this man with, what are the charges again, Bobby? Miss Terry, what are the charges against Bobby?
It's sexual assault of a child, and then they added a few days ago attempted aggravated assault with a deadly weapon.
And when you hear the circumstances of this story, and I suggest everyone listen to the podcast from last night, it's just this incredible story of how in the middle of the night he was gracious enough to open the doors for what he thought was a neighbor in distress. And this 16-year-old was telling Mr. Yates that she was locked outside of her apartment and she just needed a place to stay until she could get in to her apartment. And he let her in along with her two friends, and it ended in a nightmare. Basically, the young lady accused him of, you know, and now three people are in this house, but somehow this young lady claims that Mr. Yates was attempting to molest her. I don't know what you want to call it. We could call it a molest her in the presence of these two males, and supposedly no one was able or saw anything. And, you know, just this is an incredible story. And so Mr. Yates is going to trial on that this coming Wednesday. And we're asking everyone, if you could, call the Lamar County District Attorney's Office. Does anybody have that number handy, by the way? To call the Lamar County District Attorney's Office, ask to speak to Gary Young and tell him that you all want justice for Bobby Yates because, Mr. Gregory is on the line. I'm going to preempt and go back to Mr. Gregory. Good evening. Mr. Gregory,
good
how
evening.
Are you?
I'm fantastic. God bless you, your family, and all your audience.
Okay, wonderful. Mr. Gregory, for those who don't know, but I think everybody knows him, he's a comedian, diet guru, author, speaker, and civil rights activist. We were starting without you a little bit, and we were talking about some of the things that were going on in Paris because there's quite a few people that are on the line from Paris, Texas, who had some issues. And when they found that you were coming on the show, they wanted to come on and talk to you about some of the things that are going on in Paris.
That's good. Fantastic.
Okay. Where would y'all like to start?
Are you talking to us?
Yes.
Well, actually, I would like to say hello to Mr. Gregory. And
hello to you.
And my name is Brenda Cherry. I actually talked to you several years ago. If you recall the Shaquanda Cotton case, you were going to come down to Paris.
Yes.
And I know Al Sharpton was scheduled to come here. And I would like to say that our problems down here didn't start with Shaquanda's case when she was locked up, and they didn't end when she was released. So rather than things getting better, they've gotten worse. And so we would be thrilled if you would sit down with us or come down and help us.
Let me say this, ma'am. I don't have a civil rights organization. I go all over the world. I do 250 dates a year. And I don't book dates on a radio show. Okay? There's
okay.
So many organizations out here that do that. I mean, I've got dates that I won't be able to get around to for 2 years from now. But when we get off, I'll tell you who to call. My wife can look at the schedule. But I just got on the phone, and I'm saying, come to so-and-so, so-and-so. I'm thinking get on a plane and go to Europe next week and then come back to a health conference. But there are organizations that's what they're there for. All Al Sharpton have an organization that they can put stuff in. I don't. I don't have an organization. When I go someplace, I got to look at the research, find out what I'm going into, how long it's been going on, and all of that. I love it. I mean, that's my life. And so we're handling it like that.
Okay, I'll make sure that I get you all the contact number, Ms. Cherry, so that you all can speak with Mr. Gregory Althea. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Gregory, so basically I wanted to just talk to you today, kind of like a different type of interview, because most of your interviews are they directed it at one question or another, but you're so well-versed on so many different topics. I kind of wanted to bounce around today and just talk about, like, starting off, what's going on in Japan. What do you think of that situation?
Well, first, there's a lot of stuff going on that they're not telling us about.
Okay.
And there's a lot of things that they can't say publicly because they got billions of dollars worth of lawsuits. From farmers, there's a lawsuit. The company that built that nuclear plant is General Electric. So I know they got their people over there watching. Then you got the people who runs it for them. And then you have all the people who have interrupted their schedule. You know it's worse than they tell us when one of our battleships turn around and move 70 miles back. Then that means that there's something happening. But that happens all the time. No, nobody really tells you the truth. But when you're dealing with something like this, you should have someone there that can tell people. You know, I walk down the street, and I've never in my life found people who is frightened. There's people I see in the last 3 days, it's almost like, is that my phone or your phone?
I don't hear anything.
I hear air like it's a hurricane.
No, we don't have, I don't think anybody else hears anything either.
Okay.
It must be your phone.
And so what happens is that people are coming up and they're saying, what do you think about the, how bad you think it? And it's almost like people forgot about there was an earthquake that had killed thousands of people. It's almost like the fear of something you can't see. You don't know which way it's going. And most people don't believe the people who's telling them is telling the truth. They talk in codes. The president said the other day, "Oh, there's a atomic fallout will be in California by the weekend, but it won't have no short term effect." Well, do that mean it have a long term effect? You know, and then the fact that it happened along with the earthquake and everybody's watching, and then they see it, and so everybody's aware that something dangerous has happened. Usually when you have a hurricane or tornado or earthquake, it affects the people in the immediate area, and then those of us that look at it from outside can sympathize and empathize with them and pray for them. But very seldom you have something that's so far away, and in a week or 10 days it could be at your door. You see that with people running out buying all kinds of stuff to protect them against one of the fastest selling things. Well, it's all sold out now in America. It's potassium iodine, and the people's not even aware. You don't take potassium iodine before you have nuclear radiation on you. I mean, it can be just as bad taking a medicine that you don't need than taking a medicine that was prescribed for you. If someone said, "Oh, I think if you don't change your diet, you would have sugar diabetes in 3 years," well, you don't go start taking sugar diabetes medicine before you get it. But that's what the fear is. And the other piece is that you have people who watch Katrina, people that watch Haiti, and there's no comparison, because when you look at what's happening in Japan from the earthquake to the tsunami, 10 days ago, Japan was one of the prime, wealthy, powerful countries on the planet. And now today, they have problems that they never had before. And so when you looked at Katrina, you saw people that was helpless. They had to wait for somebody else to make a decision. When you looked at Haiti, you looked at people that's been poor for generations. You don't see that. And that's why you're not hearing many people talking about the millions of dollars that's being sent. Eventually it will. But when people look and know that they're dealing with a nation that have the technology, there's no country in the world that have the technology on how to deal with earthquakes no more than Japan. And so that was evidence. You know what, dear? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I'm going to have to hang up and call back, because I can't almost talk for this noise, and I'll call you right back.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Gregory's going to have to hang up and call us back. He's having some noise problems in his background that we cannot hear, or I cannot hear. So we're going to have him call back in and see if we can't straighten that out by him disconnecting and calling back in. I'm not certain if anyone else could hear it, but I absolutely could not hear any wind or noise on the line at the time, but he may be on a cell phone, and that could cause a problem sometime when you're talking in the switchboard, and that's the situation. Let's see if we can find him back on the board. Just 1 second. We apologize for the delay, but obviously he was experiencing some technical difficulties that we were not having. Again, while we wait on him to call in, next week's show is going to be a very powerful show. We're going to talk about what's going on in Paris, Texas. Okay, Mr. Gregory's back on the line. Can you hear us
better now? I hear you good now.
Okay. So what they're experiencing over there, should we be concerned?
Sure. You're dealing with the humanities now.
Mm-hmm.
You should be concerned, like all people are concerned.
No, I mean in terms of it affecting us over here as far as the wind shifting.
We should be concerned because we don't know which way it's going to go.
Okay.
And nobody said which way it's going to go. But we know that, you know, anytime we've been aware, I'm sure there's been things happening with the nuclear plants that we didn't know about, the public. But when you're aware, and they're not talking about one nuclear plant or two nuclear plants, they're talking about three nuclear plants. We all know the danger of radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they tell us, oh, well, you don't have anything to worry about, well, how do you know? When we had Three Mile Island, the Russians came over,
mm-hmm.
Japanese came over, all you major companies come over to see what they could learn. I said, oh, this could never happen to us. We don't have that type of system.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had Panova. Everybody went over. Japanese said, oh, this could never happen to us. We don't have that type of system. And so what we're looking at now is you have a group of people that have the sophistications to know
mm-hmm.
about all of the energy, how long it takes, how long it's in the grass. They just announced over in Japan yesterday it's affected the spinach and the grass. So if the cow eats the grass, it gets in the milk. So if they tell us, well, it's not enough in that we should worry, we're old. And then we all looking in on it. You see, there was a time before we had the type of communication system, you could hear about an earthquake. You might have to wait 24 hours before you could see the picture in the front page of paper.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we're talking, if a plane crashed in Afghanistan right now, in 5 minutes, those pictures is in your living room.
Mm-hmm.
This had never happened before. So we this is why we had trouble with recruiting people for war. When I was a little boy, I'd be 80 years old, Nick, here, wasn't no television. The only war movies you looked at was in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And they was glamorous. It was heroic. And then with television, we went into to Vietnam, and you saw it in pictures. You heard people holler, oh, Mom, oh, help me, God. Well, we never saw that in the movie. So the glamour was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they had to spend billions of dollars putting money up for recruitment. And then when they got them in, they had to pay billions of dollars to see if they could hold them.
Mm-hmm.
So we in a different planet. Now, also, if you was in high school today and someone came in with a gun and shot up the high school, didn't hurt nobody, Monday morning, they would have counselors in there to talk to the students and the teachers, right?
Right.
So this stuff is coming into your house. We're seeing all of this tragedy in our homes. The children's looking at it. You're seeing people screaming and howling, and you're seeing bodies washing up. And yet there's nobody. And I look for the day when someone puts a show on when we look at these type of tragedy where you can tune into that show and they can tell you how this could be affecting you and here's some of the things you need to do.
And someone mentioned that, you know, people that are going through that tragedy over there, it has a mental, aspect to it, too, that, you know, especially if you live in that area and you don't, you know, one day you're okay and then the next day you're homeless and, you know, then you're hearing about, you know, you could get sick because of the radiation and just, you know, you don't know what to eat. Just the panic of it all could cause a lot of mental illness for those people.
And that's because it causes the stress.
Mm-hmm.
And when stress hits your body, the first thing shuts down is your respiratory system.
Mm.
Second thing shut down is your brain. So if you could be in your house and you got 25 people sitting there and we all talking, and then you walk over to the light switch and turn the light out, we're in the dark, right?
Right.
So those systems have shut down. So when you're dealing with stress and that type of fear, the light goes out to the respiratory system, the light goes out to the brain, so the brain's in the dark, the respiratory, and then it starts affecting the whole body. You don't feel it, you don't know it, until it's too late. You're just crying, you know, oh, God, I can't believe this is happening. And so there's a lot of people that's not qualified to see certain type of tragedy, but it comes in your living room. And it changes every 3 minutes. Bulletin, bulletin, bulletin. And so you get to look at it, and you get to see it, and sure, you get stressed out, and that has a long-range effect and a short-range effect. But the worst part about it, we're so busy empathizing with the people that it's happening to, we don't feel what it's doing to our bodies. And that's why when you have doctors and nurses and the operators, they've been trained for that, you know. You have people that there's a big disaster and hundreds of people have been brought into the operating room. They've been trained for that. But just us sitting at home that's seeing it on the news and haven't been trained on how you process something like that, it could have a drastic effect.
Okay. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHT's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic, an exclusive interview with Mr. Dick Gregory. If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390. And again, press 1. A reminder, the chat room is open today. So if you're listening via the Internet, post up your questions or comments in the chat room. Mr. Gregory, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the Middle East. We saw basically just a snowball effect of people just deciding that they wanted a change all of a sudden. Do you think, was it really all of a sudden, or was there some provocateurs from, like, the West that kind of set this thing off?
The provocateurs is the CIA. I mean, that's bigger than what they're telling us. I mean, they have already had to leak out, and they don't know how it got out, but all the European countries' papers that's talking about that the CIA's involvement in that. You look at Egypt. I mean, for 45 years, there was no rumble. Are you going to tell me when there's going to be a rumble big enough to overthrow that government? They didn't see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you sit and you look at, you know, you got like 2 million people came out one day. They called it the Million Man March. Well, that's a page out of Minister Farrakhan's book.
Right.
When they talked about nonviolence and waving at the soldiers and giving the soldiers, that's a page out of the Civil Rights Movement's book. You haven't heard one person on TV make the comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, when Minister Farrakhan called for a Million Man March, there was 1,900,000 men that showed up. I know that because I got from a friend of mine who got the report from Naval Intelligence.
Hmm.
And something came over the town that day. First, the power structure was baffled because Minister Farrakhan called for that Million Man March on October the 16th. Nobody calls for a march that late in the year. You call for a march during the summer vacation where people can come, they can bring the children, and you call for it on a weekend.
Hmm.
And I can drive, get there, and he called for it on a Monday, a weekday, in October, and 1.9 million black men showed up.
Hmm.
Now, they know something strange happened because it was only 2 arrests made that day in Washington, D.C. I'm not talking about 2 people in the crowd, in the whole city. And the first one was a white man that called in a bomb threat to the police at 14th and U. And he was so dumb and ignorant, they kept talking to him on the phone long enough to go there and arrest him while he was still talking. The other arrest was a Korean selling hot dogs without a license. Nothing else. And so,
well, let me ask you this. Looking at the Middle East, can you take people from a dictatorship and quickly move them to a democracy? Is that even possible?
No. The problem is, if you in a house and the house is on fire, mm-hmm. and you burn, is it possible for me to take you out of that house and move you to safety? You damn right. But then there's another step that comes after that. What degree burns? When you jumped out that window, did you break your ankle? Did you fracture your skull? Did you break your back? Now that treatment starts. So after you've been locked up in a place, you now have to be addicted. You can be in a bad marriage for 40 years and get out of it, and that's go see the doctor and the psychiatrist. Because once you've been locked up into something so long, you tend to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
You might not like it, but you tend to accept it. And then all at once, you know, they say water seeks its own level after it's been set free.
Mm.
And so once you get free, then there's a whole lot of things you want, you desire to have. And so 40 years ago, women in America didn't have certain types of freedom. So over there in that area where there's been serious oppression against women, now they get out, and there's all kinds of new things that's happening for women. If you look at America before the Civil Rights Movement, you know,
mm-hmm.
a white woman on an airplane couldn't do anything but be a stewardess. She couldn't be a mechanic. She couldn't fly the plane. And so a black woman couldn't even be a stewardess, and a black man couldn't be a pilot. And then this Civil Rights Movement came through, and thank God for America, they didn't put for Negro only when that legislation came through.
Mm-hmm.
So that meant everybody was covered. And so for a white woman back before the Civil Rights Movement to be a stewardess, she had to look like something out of the center page of Playboy magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the Civil Rights legislation now, you get on a plane today and see an old, short, ugly, fat white stewardess. Huh? We got her that job. Didn't get it from her father, her white brother, or the United States Marines. And so before the Civil Rights Movement, a woman couldn't be a cop. And because of the Civil Rights Movement and those changes had to come, you got women now that head police departments, head homicide departments, head narcotics departments. And so when you sit and you look and see, there was a time before the Civil Rights, if you look at a sports show, you didn't see no women as commentators.
No.
And then when that opened up, the show you have now, that would have been hard to do, you know, 40 years ago, not because of your talent, but because of the sponsors and the way they looked at women when they put their budget together. And so consequently, there will be some problems, but there'll be problems that's good because as you adjust to certain things, then there's certain things you could do that you couldn't do.
Right.
And so that's what it is. But nobody says I don't want new freedom because we've been unfree for so long. I don't think we can adjust to it.
Well, let me ask you this. Should we have gotten involved with the situation in Egypt? Should we have told Mubarak he had to go? Was that for us to say?
Well, we've been saying that all along. I mean, we don't have a right to, but we didn't have a right to go over and bomb Iraq.
So why did we do it? Why did we go into Iraq and Afghanistan?
Ain't it funny, all the poor, raggedy places on the planet that don't have no natural resources, nobody seemed to be wanting liberty. Nobody seemed to want to oppress anybody. And so when you stop and think about one, let's look at something for a minute that's kind of interesting. When we went into Egypt and created that demonstrations, what happened? You had The second day, you saw people trying to get out of there. They didn't know which way it was going. They didn't know how much violence was going to play. So they said, all right, let's get out of here as fast as we can. So you pick up the paper, you listen to the news, and you see, wow, did you see that? Chinese sent planes over there the third day and took 33,000 Chinese out of Egypt. What were they doing there? They were working.
Mm-hmm.
What were they doing? They were doing, see, here's what the Chinese will do. First you have to look at that this is the first time a major empire has declined. See, for thousands of years, you had one empire decline, like the Roman Empire, and there was another white empire that took their place. And so you had all the good old boys sitting. This is the first time, you see, what we're going through in America today, that started 40 years ago. And what you're looking at is you got America now is no longer the leading power in the world.
Hmm.
Right now, China's number one, India's number two, and what baffles everybody, including me, Brazil is number three.
Hmm.
And so you sit and you look. Now, to answer the question that you're talking about, here's a headline in the Financial Times,
mm-hmm.
Thursday, March the 17th.
Mm-hmm.
Headline, China halts nuclear projects. Well, when you read down here, here's what he's saying. He said China had ordered so many nuclear plants from General Electric that had they not canceled them the other day and that the orders and they fulfilled the orders to build nuclear plants, when they finished, 40% of all the nuclear plants on planet Earth would have been in China.
Wow.
So let's look at it from a financial piece first. So when you cut that off, look at the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Look at all the systems that's involved with that. Now, the Chinese is number one. Number two is India. And number three is Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's another headline from the Financial Times, which was Monday, March the 14th, this
mm-hmm.
year. And, you know, sometimes they talk in code when they embarrass, you know. And they're saying, China knows back ahead as top goods producer. Now, is that kind of strange headline?
Yeah.
The wording, China knows this back ahead as top goods producer. What they're really saying is the Chinese now is the number one retailers on the planet.
Mm.
So they go ahead and read again. China knows this ahead as top goods producer to halt 110 years U.S. run. Now, when we talk about U.S. run, so we're giving this in horse racing manifold. You know, he won, the horse won by a nose, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And so now here's what they're saying. It says China has become the world's top manufacturing country by outputting the United States,
mm-hmm.
which had led, been number one for 110 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, watch this. Then they give a breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
They go back to the Dark Ages. They say from 500 to 1700, China and India was the number one retailer of manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
Then they say from 1700 to 1850, China was the world's number one manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
Then they said from 1850 to 1895, Britain was the number one. Then from 1895 to 2000, and 10, America was the number one manufacturer.
Are you
and
trying to...
From 2010 to now, China. Okay? And so China, and I say that to say, so now they upstairs with the big boys. So they will go to Egypt, and they'll sit at the table and say, look, not only will you build, we'll build you a dam. Not only will you build you bridges, we will loan you the money to finance it. Well, and we'll have the engineers to put it together. You want a railroad system, an upgrade, we'll do that. So now all at once now, America's looking around at our interests.
Mm-hmm.
They can wait, the Chinese have moved in. So if you come to my house and you offer to do certain things for me, I've got to show you how I'm going to pay you back, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I say, well, look, let me say this. Let me let you have some of the oil rights we have. Let me let you have some of the natural resources. So that's what they were looking at. So then you go to Libya. Same thing. The Chinese had moved in. And the Panama Canal, as we talk, 2 miles from the Panama Canal, the Chinese is building a new canal 4 times bigger than the Panama Canal, and loaning them the money and sending the technology to do it. So then all of us said, well, wait a minute, how do we stop this? You stop it by knocking out the folks that run the government now and put new leaders in that's not willing to cut a deal with the Chinese. But it's too late. So that's what we're looking at now. And when you see, remember, the newspapers, if you and I are reporters, we don't own the newspapers. We don't determine, and they'll tell us, well, we can't run that because we don't have enough research on it. And so the newspapers have always been slanted to the rich and the powerful. And so consequently, that's what you're looking at, and that's why it's kind of hard to figure it out because they got it all wrapped up in, oh, this is happening because some people after so many years want freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're trying to do is stop this rise of the Chinese. They already have become a worldwide power.
Mm-hmm.
And so now Russia is scared. They don't know which way they're going. Everybody out there is scared. They don't feel comfortable with them because of their culture pattern. I've been dealing with a white culture for thousands of years, and now y'all bring some new kids on the block, and they don't know how to handle it.
Hmm. You know, looking at the situation in Libya that you spoke of a minute ago, what do you think the outcome is going to go? Is Gaddafi going to go, or I mean, are we going to tell him like we told Mubarak that he's got to go, or what do you think is going to happen?
Look, you know the CIA and U.S. intelligence all over the world, right?
Right.
We got people that we have recruited in the army over there.
Mm-hmm.
Law people. We just give them big bucks and good jobs and stuff. So they could kill him tonight and make it look like suicide, and you're controlling all the press. Who wouldn't believe he committed suicide? Hmm?
Wow.
Who wouldn't believe it?
Wow.
And so when you stop and think about the oil, you know, all those guns that they're using to kill they citizens with either came from America or Britain or France or Italy. And so we sit around and we sell it to them, we give it to them, and then we say, oh, no, you can't use that. Well, you sold it to me. And so that's where we are. And I think, you see, we got mixed messages.
Mm-hmm.
When Hillary said he got to go, when the president said he got to go,
mm-hmm.
But when you're bold enough to tell another country that your leader got to go, you might know something that the rest of us don't know.
Hmm? Wow. And he had been in power 30 years.
Yeah, he'd been in power 40-something years.
Oh, you're talking about Gaddafi.
Oh, yeah, I'm talking about, yeah. No, yeah. And,
I think Mubarak had been 30 years. So how do you tell a government that's been in place that long that they got to go? I mean, what makes them say, okay, you say I got to go and I'm going to go? How does that work?
Well, that's what happened when you've been in power so long from one white nation after another. You get used to telling people anything you want to tell them. If they don't listen, you send your army in.
Boy, that
and
how
it goes. And I'm sure a black nation, any black nation or Irish or Italian nation or, that's been in power that long, you hate to realize, you know, it's like some men and some women too, but mostly a lot of men just misuse their wives. It's don't have, they just always, and then when they find out she's leaving, all at once, I can't live without you. And
yeah.
Sometimes you see where they kill themselves, the wife and the children.
Right.
That's just arrogance that men think they have a right to ownership of another human being, just another form of slavery.
That's really what that is. Well, we're going to switch gears a little bit. Before we do, if you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHC 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic. We're having an exclusive interview with Mr. Dick Gregory. We're kind of mixing it up a little bit. He's so well-versed on so many topics, we're just going to ask him whatever comes to mind. If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390. And again, press 1. A reminder, the chat room is open today, so if you're listening via the Internet, post up your questions or comments in the chat room, and I will try to get to them before the show is over. We saw you on CNN recently, Mr. Gregory, and you were talking to Soledad O'Brien, and y'all were talking about some things that went on in Memphis. I grew up there, and we heard you say that the Withers, Mr. Withers, the great civil rights photographer, was an FBI informant.
No, you didn't hear me say that.
Oh, sorry. Who said that?
That's what the show was about.
What's the show was about? What was your comment about?
The Memphis newspaper, under the Freedom of Information Act,
right,
took the government to court and wanted certain civil rights files,
right,
on people. Well, normally they block out the names and the number.
Mm-hmm.
They did that on his file, but some kind of way, if you read what they're telling us, they forgot to block out his number. So you could take that number and trace it back to it was him.
Hmm.
And so Withers had been a confidant, was well-respected by the whole movement. There were some people after it came out who knew him, said they always thought he was working for the government. We in the movement didn't think it and didn't know it.
Hmm.
And so his daughters and his sons come out and said they don't believe it. Well, you know, I'm sure Hitler's children and Dracula's children would say the same thing. And so consequently, what the show was about was to get a group of people that was in that movement, and how did you feel about this being exposed? Well, if you look at the show, there was something wrong with the show. First, they was interviewing his family and didn't identify them that this is his family. So you just thought that was just people in the street that didn't think.
They never did post their names. You're right. Okay.
The other thing is, Withers was one of the first, if not the first, black policeman in Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
He got fired for checking down people.
Wow.
And was prosecuted as a felon. How come they didn't say that on the show?
They didn't.
They never said one time this man was an excellent. Then he left there and he got a job with the State Department of Liquor. He got fired from that because he was shaking down nightclub owners and liquor store owners. And so they present him as, oh, this great photographer. And then Andy Young was one of King's close advisors. They asked Andy Young, said, how do you feel about it? And he said, oh, I don't think Martin Luther King would have mind him making a few dollars on the side. And I'm saying, Mr. Andy, how can you say that? I mean, how can you say that? I mean, who are you working for?
Mm.
I mean, first, when you stop and think about, he wasn't just taking pictures and giving information.
Mm-hmm.
He was taking pictures of license plates. He was meeting with FBI agents regular. Andy knows this because it's all come out now.
Mm-hmm.
And so Andy's saying, well, I don't think we all gave information, Andy. Better watch yourself now, because you're telling us we ain't all gave nothing.
Mm.
And you know darn good and well King wasn't giving no information. We didn't have to give information. What we was doing was open. We knew we got ourselves with the Justice Department, said here's when we're going to have a march. We had a press conference and said when we're going to have a march. We had nothing to hide. So why would you have to talk to the FBI when they wasn't no friend? When Mrs. LaRusso, the white woman that was murdered the day of the Selma, the Montgomery march, the meeting that was over, she was on her way back to the airport to fly back to Detroit. A car pulled up next to her, shot and killed her. What they didn't tell us till years later, that in that car was an FBI man talking to an informant. So how do you sit there and let them pull the trigger when you the FBI on letting go some of the things that you wanted? They didn't give a damn about us. No shape, form, or fashion, or any white person that would come to work for our liberation. And so when you stop and think about that, this Willis, now, you've always had people, you know, the Germans had people that were snitching on the Germans. The Italian had people that was double agents. The British had people, America. But when you get your own that's trusted, you know, he was more than just a Negro that was working for the FBI. He was a trusted one. Trusted. Look, I knew him. We all loved him and respected him. If he'd have walked up to me one day and said, Dick, take this package, King's, we're having a party for him, and we got this birthday cake for him. And if you take this up to his room, my daughter just had an emergency. I got to leave. I wouldn't have thought nothing about it. You know, it could have been a bomb. See, that's the difference when somebody you trust. It could have been a bomb. It could have been drugs. It could have been sitting him up for anything. And so, and I can't understand how that Young, Andy Young, could overlook that. He wasn't just, and then when he said, well, he was good for us because he was giving pictures to Jet and Ebony magazine and letting the movement around the world. And I hadn't slowed up yet to get in touch with Jet and Ebony magazine and to apologize for Andy. Jet and Ebony magazine didn't need nobody sending them pictures. They photographers, everywhere we would go, they was there. When King got his Nobel Prize, Jet was there. They didn't depend on the UP picture or AP. And so for Andy to be so disrespectful for Jet and Ebony magazine, like had it not been for Withers, Jet and Ebony magazine wouldn't have had these pictures to send around the world. And so, you know, but they can't change it.
Well, you said there's a lot going on with the trick photography from the civil rights movement. You said that famous photo that we saw of Dr. King laying on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel and those Jesse Jackson and the rest of them that were pointing that the shooter is over there. You said that picture was...
Oh, wait. That was not Jesse up there.
Oh, it was not Jesse. I'm sorry. Who was on the balcony?
Here's what I said.
Okay.
I said, if you and I and your brother and sister and mother was at a restaurant, sitting on the balcony eating, right?
Right.
And a shot rang out, right?
Right.
We going to hit the floor, right?
Right.
Now, how did them folks who was pointing know there wasn't going to be a second shot?
That's right.
And you'll be able to see it because in not too long, the anniversary of King being assassinated will be April the 4th, and they'll be running those pictures, and all you got to do is look. What they were doing, they was pointing the wrong way. Dr. King was shot from down on the ground, okay?
Wow.
And so to throw everybody off, this group of people was pointing. So that's how you know that picture was staged. Now, when he gets hit from down on the ground, the folks that shot him, see, up until a couple of months ago, we always thought the guy who actually killed King was a Memphis police lieutenant named Earl Clark. Because when the shot rang out, a cab driver named Phillips, we called him cab driver 50, 58, he heard something, but nobody knew King was shot. Mm-hmm. He thought it was a car backfire. He looked around, and he saw this white man jumping over this fence, like a four-foot concrete fence.
Mm-hmm.
And he still don't know King's been shot. So the guy walked past him, and he waited a while, and he walked up to the corner, followed it, and saw him turn left and get in a Memphis police cruiser. So about 3 days when the police came, he was telling the police and the press what had happened, and the next thing you know, he ends up dead. They said he committed suicide. He parked his cab and jumped off a bridge. So when we start getting involved, more involved, like in the last couple of months, we find out that James Clark, Earl Clark, did not kill him. He was what they call the spotter. When you assassinate somebody, you have a sniper, and then you have somebody that spots, tell you the wind velocity, the temperature, and all of that. Up until that information came, and that was on a guy named Thaddeus Matthews' show in Memphis, where he interviewed the brother of the guy who killed King. So here's what we found out. We found out that the gun that James Earl Ray had was not, did not match the bullet that came out of King. They wasn't worried about it because when they got ready to frame James Earl Ray, they was going to leave a gun. And what happened was when the bullet shell came out, they had to look for it, but there was so much weeds and bushes, and they just murdered. They had to get out of there. So the next thing we know, the city workers who had come out to clean up the bushes and the weeds and everything, but the real reason they was there, they had to find that bullet.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and so consequently, there's so much that's involved with this case. It will all come out because there's too many people out here now that know the truth, and there's too much scientific data that's beginning to come up now that you can use and say, well, no, this back then they said it happened this way, but it didn't. It's like, let me just deviate for 1 second.
Okay.
When President Kennedy was shot in Dallas, what happened was the car went down Elm Street. Now, that decision wasn't made until 30 minutes before Kennedy was shot. Now, if that car wasn't supposed to go down Elm Street, then how did Lee Harvey Oswald know 6 weeks before Kennedy was shot to go get a job at the book depository there, which the car happened to pass Elm Street?
Mm-hmm.
And so all of this is beginning to come out now, and you got a new group of people. You know, 50% of everybody on this planet in America today was not alive when King was killed.
Mm-hmm.
70% of everybody on this planet Earth today was not alive when King was killed. So you got people reading fresh stuff now and listening to shows like this here that don't bring no ulterior motives, that don't bring no, oh, no, this couldn't have happened. And then you can punch up and go look involved, look and see how it happened. And so it's the tricks. Look, when Malcolm X, the day he died, called me. I was working in New York nightclub. And I was at the Basin Street East. It was my last night. And so he called me Sunday morning. He said, Dick, brother Greg, Malcolm. He said, just want to know, make sure you're coming by the Ottoman Ballroom because I'm going to reveal it all. I said, Malcolm, I'm sure they're going to take you down today. I'm not going to let them have two for the price of one. So I called my wife and had her book me for a noon speech at a college outside of O'Hare Airfield for 12 o'clock. And I said, Malcolm, when I hang up, you see, I love you, and I don't want to take a chance. I'll get weak and come to hear you speak when I know what the government's going to do. And I said, when I hang up, I'm going to call Adam Clayton Powell, congressman, and one of the great ministers that have ever walked this planet. And I said, and I'm going to tell him when he gets through with his sermon, stay away from the Ottoman Ballroom. Now, Malcolm's hit. You know, you seen that great picture of Malcolm laying on the floor?
Right.
And the guy giving him mouth to mouth?
Right.
Well, that was a New York undercover cop that had worked his way up the line and got that close to Malcolm. He was one of his chief bodyguards. And if you get Malcolm X's autopsy, it said cause of death, and get James Earl, Lee Harvey Oswald, who they said killed Kennedy, you get his autopsy, cause of death, Malcolm X's autopsy, and Lee Harvey Oswald, they give the cause of death. It's the same thing. Air bubbles to the lungs. Malcolm died from air bubbles to the lungs. Lee Harvey Oswald. Why? Because you don't get mouth to mouth on a chest wound. Okay? So this thing is so conspirative. When they shoot you, they got somebody in the whole world just think that's a good Samaritan up giving you mouth to mouth. That's the one that do that. So the air bubbles will come into the lung, and that's what you will die from.
Wow.
And so they've been doing it for so long. Then we find out that Malcolm was standing on the stage. So, look, if you standing up on the stage and somebody's down on the floor and they shooting up at you, right, because you elevated up, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we finally forced the government to give us the autopsy pictures on Malcolm, all the bullets in Malcolm is going down. Okay? Not up. And so then, the CIA finally did break down the myth that they rented the Ottoman Ballroom 2 weeks before Malcolm came in there. And so we sure that's when they went in and redid the ceiling and had open holes in the ceiling. And we also know that they took pictures of it. And so we eventually one day it all come out.
Wow. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHC 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic. We are having an exclusive interview with Mr. Dick Gregory. If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390. And again, press 1. A reminder, the chat room is open today. So if you have a question or a comment, post it up in chat, and I will try to get to it before the end of the hour. We're down just underneath the hour mark. I'm going to go to the phone lines, area code 817-841. Good evening. Good evening. 817-841, good evening. You're on center stage. Okay, we're having some technical difficulties with opening up that phone line. 817-841, good evening. You're on center stage.
Yes, let me.
Oh, good evening. How are you?
Fine, thank you. my question for Mr. Gregory is, what does he think are the pros and cons of integration, and what effects does it have on the black community in 2011 as far as the rebirth of racism?
Well, kind of repeat that for me there, because it was a little fuzzy. I heard some of it. What was the whole question?
Repeat that one more time.
Okay. What is your assessment of the pros and cons of integration?
What is your assessment?
And especially in the wake of the new racism that we're facing in 2011.
Well, first, ain't no new racism. It's the same racism. Then, ain't no new racism. You act like it went away, and then it came back. It's the same racism. They just have to use different tactics now. For instance, up until the 60s, what black folks was dealing with was physical. I could physically be lynched. I could physically be beat up. I'm walking down in Mississippi, And some white man jump out and hit me. Who I'm going to call? Let me deviate for a minute, and I'll come back to you quickly. Y'all who do your research, you can get this. This is the Chicago Tribune. Front page story, Friday, March the 10th, 1978. Front page. FBI memo used mob to kill Dick Gregory. The late J. Edgar Hoover ordered the Chicago office of the FBI to develop measures to neutralize Dick Gregory. That was their secret word. So I'm saying that to say this here. Physically, here's a man, the most powerful lawman, one of the most powerful men in the world, gets in touch with the Chicago FBI and tells them to kill me physically. And so back then, you had to worry about all of that. Today, it can happen, but you didn't expect it, you know. And so consequently, what we're dealing with today is not physically, it's mentally, the whole mental piece. For instance, we say black-on-black crime. Well, wait a minute. What is black-on-black crime? We tired of black folk killing black folk. Now, that should bother white folks because we didn't say we tired of killing. We said we tired of black folk killing black folk. Then who be left? So when you stop and think about, listen to the mental part. If we all went to China tonight, who do you think killing Chinese in China? If we went to Italy tomorrow, who do you think's killing Italians in Italy? And if 98% of all white folks in America last year that was murdered, if 98% of them was murdered by white folks, if white folks ain't talking about white-on-white crime, how did we get duped into talking about black-on-black crime? And so it's that whole mental piece of the mindset. Integration now, that thing, this movement, never before in the history of planet Earth have anyone had the success of what African Americans have had in a 45-year period, in spite of black folks and white folks lying to one another. For instance, every time I go to Mississippi, and I went down there, and I'm telling you, I was scared. Because I've heard all these stories about Mississippi, and when Senator Eastland and I can't think of the other senator's name, they got so angry at what was happening, they put pressure to cut off the food stamps for Mississippi. And we got a group of people and said, wait a minute, I'll buy the food. I said, and so we'd buy 70 tons of food every 2 weeks and rent planes and fly it down there until we broke the back of that. Every time I went, I was scared. But I went anyway. And do you know what it's like to be in Mississippi, man, and somebody kidnap you or kidnap your family, and you can't call the FBI, the police, because they probably did it? And I say that to say, did I know that I could be here today and say to you that without guns, without meanness, because King said, look, look, you love, don't no hatred, you love. And we thought he was crazy, some of us. But I can sit here today and say to you that I never thought I'd live to see the day that a black man would be head of the Mississippi State Troopers. Mm. When you stop and think about all the games that have happened across this country because of that movement, there's nobody has had the type of success with a liberation movement that we had. And that's because the strongest two forces in the history of America has always been the black woman and the black church. We're the only group of people that can start at the bottom of the list and make it all the way to the top in one generation. The Kennedy family, with their billions of dollars, took them 12 generations to make it to the White House. You got Jesse Jackson, one of the brilliant, profound minds on the planet. Who is his daddy? We don't know. What school did his mother go to? None. Okay, one generation. You got a black man, the only black African-American that's sitting on the Supreme Court, one of the most powerful clubs in the world, because Supreme Court, they can't make law. They don't make law. They interpret law. And you know what kind of power that I cannot make a human being, but if somebody gave me the power to interpret if you're a man or a woman, so you're a man, I say you're a woman, you're a woman, I say you're a man, and that's the final decision. That's how powerful. The only African-American sitting on that is a guy named Clarence Thomas. Who is his daddy? He don't know. What school did his mother go to? She didn't. She washed toilets and made up beds in hotels. From the bottom all the way to the top. We do it over and over and over. The only black governor in America, as we talk, is Deval Patrick. He's the governor of Massachusetts. Where was he born? He was born in a housing project, Robert Taylor Homes, in Chicago. And had a two-bedroom apartment. He had him, his two other brothers and sisters, his mother and grandmother. The children slept in one room and every on bunk beds. Every third day, one of them had to sleep on the floor. His, somebody plucked him out of there, carried him to Massachusetts, put him in an academy. He leaves there. They take him to Boston. He finished there. He go to law school. He's so brilliant that ExxonMobil just plucked him out and put him over their legal department. One generation. And so when you stop and think about, you know, with no help from the government, with no help from a whole lot of people, we just pushed and pushed and pushed. And with the leadership, you know, can you be willing to die? That's how we lost the war in Vietnam. General Giap, who led the North Vietnamese Army, he wrote a book 35 years before we got there, and we just hadn't read it. He said, give me an army that's willing to die, and I will destroy any army that's willing to kill. And so when King said, nobody want to die, but it is better to die than to kill, and we proved that. And the whole world is echoing it around the world. That it's not about hatred. It's not about bitterness. You can understand it. You can understand if somebody kills your mother or your father or your child, but that don't make it right just because you understand it. And so consequently, when you look at race relations, look, I can look at it in my house. You know, there's so much going on in America today that the New York Times and Time Magazine are not going to tell you. My daughter, my oldest daughter, she has two PhDs from the London School of Economics in sex harassment at the workplace. There's not another person on this planet. So if she came in to testify to you, there's nobody else they can bring in because with protocol, she's the only authority on the planet. My baby son, before he went to Howard University and to run a school there, he was the financial analyst for the city of New York. Now, he couldn't tell them folks how to spend $35 billion, but they couldn't touch it until he analyzed it. And so one of my younger daughters, Miss Gregory, her first name is M-I-S-S, she's the lead prosecutor in Brooklyn on sex crimes and murders with a staff of over 1,000 people. Now, if this wasn't in my family that I knew this, I wouldn't know what's going on. And this is happening all over the country because of the civil rights movement. Now, when we talk about integration, I was there. I don't have to be validated by the New York Times or the Washington Post. Let me tell you something. We never asked for integration. We asked for all of it. We was asking for equal justice under the law, okay? When they looked around, we didn't have that many people with us. It wasn't that many black folks or white folks with us. No, you would think it was not that we won. And so people give you according to your troops. And so consequently, we ended up with that. And then they want to blame the movement for integration. Well, the bad part about that is every speech was ever made, every article, every negotiation, it's on record. And nobody went in negotiations, give us integration. We want it all. We want full rights under the United States Constitution, and there's nothing in the United States Constitution that mentions the word integration.
You just tuned in. You're listening to the all-new KLHT 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic. We're having an exclusive interview with Mr. Dick Gregory. If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. Speaking of racism, Mr. Gregory, has racism worsened for blacks since we got President Obama in?
Has it worsened?
No. Has it worsened?
No. No. What has happened is you hear a lot of people blowing off because they cannot tolerate an African-American being in the White House. You'd have seen the same thing, not to the night. If Hillary would have won, you would have had women saying, you know, look, you got women, basically white women, that go to college and become nuns. You got white men that go to college and become priests. The woman, nun, cannot ever be pope, cannot ever listen to confessions. Those are white women. I mean, you got a handful of black nuns. And so I'm saying it hadn't worsened. What you hear now is more people coming out and criticizing him with things that they didn't criticize Bush with. Well, hey, that's part of what happens until it gets fleshed out, until it gets fleshed out. But you got black folks in policy-making positions today that we've never had before. We look at the president of the United States, but there are black folks and there are women. There is a white woman president of Harvard University. All of that comes from this movement. Do you know before we start pushing legislation through, if you was in a wheelchair and you would try to cross the street, that concrete wasn't gouged out so you could roll up in there. That come under our handicapped people was covered under our legislation. And so, no, it hadn't got worse. Matter of fact, it didn't got better. But what you see it now is a new group of people. And people say the Tea Party is racist. Well, wait. Did they just get racist? Have they always been racist? The Tea Party is a bunch of slighting white folks and a handful of black folks. That's fear. Fear. They're out of work. They don't know when they're going to get a job. Do you know what it's like to all your life know that because of your hard working, that you know your children, before they're born, going to go to Harvard, Yale, Stanford, and now all at once the economy got so bad, you have them going to community college? Sure, people's angry. In New York City last year, 75% of all white women that was murdered was killed by their boyfriends or husband. I never have been that high. Why? Fear, out of work, haven't got a job. Working halftime, had to take a cut back in salary. That's what you're seeing when you look and see Milwaukee. All of those hundreds of thousands of people that come out. Why? Because it's affecting them. You got white folks that's coming out with the union thing that was nowhere around us because segregation didn't affect them. They didn't, I mean, affecting them mentally. And so consequently, now this is affecting them. All at once, this is their paycheck. In California, it might be tomorrow. No, Monday. They get ready to fire, not lay off. They get ready to fire 19,000 teachers. There's going to be a whole lot of people, you know, concerned that normally hadn't been concerned.
Okay. Let me ask, next week we're going to do a show about some of the injustices in Paris, Texas. But what should a group of people that have seen a system that's not working for black people do? If they see just a gross injustice going on in their area, what's the first thing that people should do? I mean, if they want to galvanize and do something, how do they do it? What do they do?
Well, I don't know enough about Paris. Do they have an NAACP?
Yeah, but the NAACP, it's the only place I've ever heard that there's more people of Caucasian descent in the NAACP than there are black people in the NAACP.
Well, they didn't invent that. Mayor Daley invented that in Chicago.
Oh, really?
He took over. Look, let's say you have an organization, right?
Yeah.
Well, what's the name of your company?
My company, let's just say Center State.
Okay. Now, let's say that you have to have a board, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you own the stock, right? So we buy stock, right?
Right.
So we come in and buy enough stock that we control it.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to appoint X amount of people to the board of directors, right?
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, they can vote you out, huh?
Right.
That's what Daley would do. He had black precinct captains that would go out and recruit Negroes to join the NAACP and they was really for daily.
Wow.
So they would roll out any. So that happens all the time. What do you do? Open up another organization. That's what you do. Go to the black church. And don't tell me about the black church. There's the black church. You go, you keep going and keep going and keep going. And you see. And you know, you don't need too much power. Then you start doing boycotts. You know, see, that question you just asked me, it's already, the whole world knows. Rolls apart. Huh?
Well, you know, but that place in, you'd have to know Paris. I think they're going to give you an earful when they
no,
talk.
No. You know, every time I hear this, it's always the same thing. You got to know Paris. Paris is America. All y'all think that you got special inclusivity of being dogged by white folks, okay? It's happening. You got more Negroes every day that's gunned down by the cops at the end of the year in New York than Paris, Texas, okay?
That's true.
It's a game. It's a game they got us playing, okay? And so when you stop and think about all the police brutality that go on in California, all the crazy stuff that go on all over, but all at once, y'all want to personalize this, huh? Because when you personalize it, you say, oh, it's just so, no. No, everybody started off the same way. And then some people said, man, we can't take it. And then so you hold a meeting in your house. And said, okay, here's what we're going to do. Okay, here's what we're going to do. And then you do it. Don't tell me about there's lawyers out here that won't handle the case because there's too much pressure on it. Then you organize and call for a boycott. That's what happened in the South in the early days before the movement got that big. And let me tell you something. Pullman porters, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Pullman porters. It was named after the guy who invented the sleeping car, something Porter. And he went to Europe and to Britain where they made these sleeping trains that you could sleep in. And he thought that there's enough wealth in America today because the real wealthy people, they have their own trains. They just, if that train's going to St. Louis, they just hook it onto that. But there were a lot of people with money that couldn't afford their own car. But they wanted to sleep. They wanted a good meal. So he went over to London and had them put an order in for these sleeping cars. And then he came this way at the beginning of Reconstruction. Then he came south. He was out of Chicago. Then he came south, and he was looking for Negroes, 6'3", dark-complected, and white pearly teeth, and could smile. And that's how he put that together. And that's where the Pullman porters started. It was called Pullman porters, named after Richard Pullman. Now, when they came south, they couldn't stay in hotels. They couldn't eat in restaurants. So it was to the benefit of the railroad owners to see to it, because there was so much money being made, that these Negroes had, so they made deals. We went to the black church and made deals with the black community that they could rent rooms in their home. And the railroad paid for it, huh? And so the black folks would come in and come out, and they'd go all across the country. And they was our town choir. They was the ones that brought us the message back. They working with these rich white folks. And when you got somebody who you put below you or below God, then they come invisible. So you say all kind of things. I knew some Pullman porters. I knew their children. Their fathers got rich because they hear these white men talking about certain things they're going to do on the stock market. Watch what's going to happen next week and such and such. Let me tell you who's going to win. Now, I say that to say this. So there becomes such a bond. If you could go back and do the research and see about 60, 70 years ago, your top African Americans, about 90% of them came out of families where the father was a Pullman porter. And Thurgood Marshall's father was a Pullman porter. And so what happens is when you set up that kind of bond with Negroes in the South that bring you into their home and that meal you get, and it's not like a meal at the restaurant. It's a home-cooked meal. And then all at once, the Montgomery Improvement Association, Rosa Parks, that thing hit so big all over the world. And all over the world, people were sending millions of dollars, huh? Millions of dollars to the Montgomery Improvement Association. Now, let's go back to them days. Can you imagine some Negroes taking them checks to the bank in Alabama? They never would have got their money. So what did they do? They gave them to the Pullman porters, and they went back up north. They opened up checking accounts and brought them the receipts back on their next return. That's what this movement was about. That's, I mean, so you sit and you look at things, and so what you do, you know, it's easy. It's a cheap way out. You say, ah, well, ain't no other place like this. Well, you had people say that in New York. When Diallo, the African, that was shot 40 times in the back, and they said, well, what was the reason we kept shooting it? Because it looked like he kept lunging at us. He was up on the porch. Kept lunging at us, and we had no alternative. Well, you know, you got a whole lot of people that think a black man, you have to shoot 40 times. Look at that big black buck. Jesus Christ. Well, because the community came and surrounded it, and the Al Sharpton's and state legislators. I mean, that was a case where people were just totally outraged. And so what happened is, when they do an independent autopsy, they found out when that first bullet hit him, it knocked him out of his shoes and severed his spinal cord to the extent that he wouldn't have been able to blink his eyebrows, his eyelashes, okay? And so I'm saying, when people say, well, yeah, we could have said the same thing in the civil rights movement, but we kept on, sure, people going to die. People are going to die. You go to other counties. You go and recruit people to come in. There's a whole lot of people that want freedom. There's a whole lot of people that want justice. And that's why the NAACP for years had so many people. So you're going to get some. You're going to get some crooked NAACP. You got crooked cops and crooked doctors and crooked lawyers. That don't mean you're supposed to give up. And let me tell you something that's very interesting. You think about the police brutality that happens across this country in the black community. Now, ask yourself a question. How come you ain't never turned on a radio show like this or turned on the news or TV, pick up a paper, and see what white folks is crying over these black cops who shot their husband, their wife, their daughter 48 times in the back? Now, out of all the thousands of black cops in America, how come you don't think that white folks ain't complaining about black cops shooting their white loved ones? You think it's because black folks don't do that because they're too spiritual? You think they don't do it because they're better trained? No, they're not doing it because they know white folks ain't going to tolerate it. And when it gets to the point that America knows we not going to tolerate it, that's when it's going to stop. But it got to start somewhere. You can take a little bitty match and go up to Oklahoma where they have them forest fires. Take a little bitty match and start one little fire, and it can damn near burn the whole state down. Mm-hmm. One little bitty match. And so I'm saying, you know, when you say, oh, there's no place like this. Now, what's the town? Y'all need to help me. That town in Texas where they're putting all, where they're putting all them black folks in jail?
Oh, that was Hoodia. Or Tootie.
Planting drugs on them. Tootie. And all at once, they got disgraced all over the world because people kept fighting and fighting. Now, it seems funny when you frame me and I'm doing 10 years in jail because I took a plea. Well, there's a whole lot of people that have no money, no education, and they say, look, we're going to give you life in jail unless you plead and also talk against this other person. And then it all came out. This guy was sitting up African-American men, framing them and going through all of that. So what I'm saying is, you know, if the NAACP ain't going to do it, you start off with five people in a house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Paris wanted to get, if had a brand-new high school and you never had a football team and you decide you're going to have a football team, you come together, you say, well, we're going to hire a coach. We got to have a field. She flew the plane in first. Mm-hmm. And then one day, Paris, Texas has the greatest football team in the history of America. They got so many youngsters to come out of there and go right to pro. Okay, how'd that happen? Hard work. Not saying, oh, ain't no football team here, and we can't find a coach. No, that's your job. That is your job. And you can, and you do it, first you start off with the family and show them some love. And then you keep talking about it. And then you stand and you start printing up something. Let me tell you, when we busted Matt Daly, I mean, nobody would dare touch him. You think them thugs in the Roman Empire, he'd make them look like a picnic for the Pope. So we'd have got together with a few handful of people, and we said, okay, let's take him down. Okay, now you have to know what Chicago was like. They would kill you and wouldn't think nothing of it. So we met with five people, and we talked, and then the next week we met again, and then next week we met again. And now a couple of people can't come because they got an obligation, so we go get two more. And then after about 6 months, we got 12 people. And you got to bring a dollar. You got to bring $10 every time we meet. So you got 12 people bringing $10. That's $120. And now after that first year is over, we got a nice little stash going, and now you got to bring $100 a month. That's where we're getting the money to buy the stamps to do the stuff we want. Mm-hmm. And now we said, okay, now we're going to go, and the mob owns all of these Red Rooster grocery stores in the Negro neighborhood, and they ain't sending them bad quality food. Plus, they cheat, and you go in and want 2 pounds of sugar, they give you a pound and 3/4. You go in and you want 2 pounds of pork chop, they'll give you the 2 pounds and they take 2 pork chops off. And black folks was getting credit and they just thought, oh, you're so nice to me. So this is where we said, okay, let's start and get the Red Rooster. So we had the press conference. And the mob guy, Tony Accardo, owned the Red Roosters, all of them in the black neighborhood. So we had a press conference. We're going to the Red Rooster tomorrow and we're tolerating the way they're treating Negroes. Now, we let him know that we was going so they could be ready for us, right? Mm-hmm. So we get there, and we ask black folks, we set up scales. We ask black folks, we like to weigh your stuff and see if the weight is right. And then black folks wouldn't give us it back. Why? Because the white man was feeding them, was letting them run late on their credit. So they lost. When they got hungry, they never saw us. So now we leave. And the whole press, was, oh, how irresponsible this is, and da, 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 da. So then I go down, I meet with Tony Accardo, the mob guy, because he loved me as an entertainer, right? And he said, Greg, I love you. You love me like a son, oh, I bet. Said, look, your people don't want to be helped. Greg, you got a brilliant career. I said, man, we're going to bring you to your knees. So then 2 days later, no, I left and I said, I'm smarter than you, chump. You want to? Now, let's tangle. 2 days later, we held a press conference. Here's what we said. We said, we're coming back to the Red Rooster at 36 in Indiana. And we're going to bring our scales back. And we're going to stay there until these black folks put their purchase on our scales so we can see if they've been cheated or not. Now, we just said that, right? The whole world in Chicago know we coming, right? So what does that mean? They say to everybody coming in and buy something today, y'all make sure they got the right weight because the press going to be here and that Gregory and his boy is going to be weighing, okay? So now they're not cheating you today. You know how we did? Our scales was off, huh? Okay? Mm-hmm. Okay, and the press went crazy. I go down and talk to Tony and say, I told you I'm smarter than you, boy. Now, we sit down and make a deal. What can we do? Well, you got to correct this, but here's what we want. We want 500 Christmas baskets for families. So they said, that seems fair. This was in June. So then we come back in October and tell them what we want in the basket. We would like a fifth of scotch. I think back then black folks was drinking cutty sauce. We'd like a fifth of Old Taylor, and we like a fifth of gin, and we like a bottle of wine, and we like a turkey, a goose, and a ham. Craig, you're killing me. Wait a minute. Poor folks. I said, no, we're not getting this for poor folks, brother. You run your movement. I don't help you run the mob. You know, so here's what we did. If I come to you, where? You in Dallas? Fort Worth.
Yes. Dallas.
If I come to Fort Worth today and find a homeless person, welfare, homeless, and I give them a brand new Rolls Royce, right?
Right.
They will say, thank God. Oh, Jesus, thank God. I come there and find me the average doctor, black doctor, lawyer, and people making good money and give it to them. They'll say, thank you, Dick Gregory. So we was building a movement. That's why we didn't give nothing to poor folks. Huh? We gave it to folks who understand, and that's how we built the movement. That's how we built the movement. Now we do another thing. We look at time and motion studies, traffic staircase phenomenon. We're going to see where the corners where the most Negroes get on the subway and the bus every morning. So we find out that 63rd and Cottage Grove, every month, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, there's about 93,000 black folks that pass that corner getting on the bus or the. Now, on Friday, we find a strange thing. Average 93,000 get on the bus and subway at 63rd and Cottage every day. But Friday, it goes down to 80. Why? Because men and women, husband and wife, drive the wife to work. Huh? Coming back, we find that out of the 80 that go, you get something like, well, maybe 50. Come back. Why? Because your husband and wife meet you, you go shopping and all. So we got that pattern. Now we started with our signboards. We know the top 10 spots where black folks, and we hold them up and say, register. Here's where you go register. Here's what we need you to do. And we just wore it down. What y'all tolerating there, don't think that everything was okay there in Paris and then something happened. It's been happening all along. So when you let some, if you stand on the corner and you cut and you don't do nothing about it and you bleed, the more you bleed, the longer it takes you to heal. And so now what you got to do is put a structure together. And that's with love and kindness and faith. What you got going for, you know you right, huh? You know you right. And so, and then start putting it together and putting it together and putting it together, and then it gets to the point where they said, hope, something ain't right. You got a county there. You could take the county with the right leadership. Okay, here's what we want to do. We want to get a Bell Telephone 900 number. 900. That's where you call in, and whatever it costs a call, they'll put on your phone bill.
Mm-hmm.
And you can come together and say, we're going to have a 900 number for this county. And anybody have a complaint about police brutality, call this 900 number. It'll cost you $25. It automatically goes on your phone bill. Now, all at once now, you sit up. Of course, now, they're going to be tricking. You're going to have cops calling in and calling in, tricking you, trying to get you in trouble. But you don't worry about that. All you're doing now, when they know that you have some place to call, see, in Paris, Texas, as bad as this, you got some little counties out there, man, that some of them probably ain't even got running water. What do you think happened to them? But when they know, all you have to do is the word say drop a dime, the whole behavior change. And then join the NAACP in the urban league. That's one thing I like about my Jewish brother. They don't argue about the organization don't do nothing. They just join it. And we knew, look, in the old days, if I wasn't Dick Gregory, known all over the world, here's what I would handle. When a cop pulled me over and they want to see your driver's license, I'd open up my wallet, I'd make sure they see my NAACP membership. I'd make sure they see my Urban League membership. I'd make sure they see my Southern Christian leadership. I'd make them sure they see this picture of Malcolm in my wallet. Now they know they're not dealing with a chump. And things change. Now they know when they go upside your head, you got some backup. So what you got to do is sit, but you got to come together with love. Come together, not over dinner. Ain't no damn party. Just come together if you don't meet for 30 minutes every Wednesday. And then all at once, people will come in with ideas. And then all at once, cops will start following you. Cops will start taking license plate numbers and all of that. So it's all at once. And then a lot of times what black folk will do, because, you know, they'll bug your room to see what you're saying. All you got to do is hold a meeting for 3 hours and don't say nothing. There ain't nowhere in the world that they think you ain't plotting on them. So we have the power. We've always proved that. And all you got to do is sit down and use it and sympathize with you. I know what you're talking about there. We get cases like this all the time. It's been happening all the time. And then sometimes it makes so much national news, you know, that it shocks America, embarrasses the government. Another thing you all can do there is start taking petitions, sending it to Holder and to the President of the United States. Huh? Get you a website. See, don't nobody like that. Here's how you deal with roaches. You don't get a gun and shoot them. You turn the light on, and roaches will run. Okay? These roaches there been living in that darkness for so long, they think they own the night. All you got to do is turn the lights on, and you see behavior change.
Wow. And you know what? Another thing that Dick Gregory shared with me, because doing this show ain't easy sometimes, y'all, he told me a soldier can't be scared. You remember you told me that?
Yeah. A soldier can start off scared, but you lose your fear.
Yeah.
If you don't lose your fear, you can't be a soldier. Can't be scared. Is it worth dying for? If it ain't worth dying for, then suffer. No. That's simple.
So we go to war.
I'd like to come there and see how many black men, I say men because years ago, woman couldn't be in the military.
Mm-hmm.
How many black men from Paris went to war, killed folks, or got killed, and then come back home and you ain't liberated yourself? Huh? How can somebody respect you? Huh? Come home all over the world. I'd like to see, you know, I interviewed, what's the guy they lynched down there, drugging?
James Byrd?
Yeah, okay. We got involved with the James Byrd case. Because the three white men, the reason Bush was governor, didn't have no problem with them, because they had arrested those three whites before they identified who this Negro was. And then they prosecuted him with a Negro farming of the jewelry. Huh? And they gave him death. Now, I'm against the death penalty. I'm against the death penalty. If they said we're going to draft 80-year-old men to go to war, and if you don't go, we're going to give you the lecture chair. I'm not going to run to Canada. I'll go turn myself in and bring them a new fuse. So that's what you can do. Well, make sure your lecture chair works. I said to my wife, if any of my sons or daughters want to go to the military and kill folks, and they're going to be willing to die to liberate black folks, I'm not talking about killing. I said, then I will move out the house. Now, let me tell you why. I would never tell them they can't come back to this house because I have to have respect for the mother that birthed them. So I know she would not want an ultimatum where them children could never come back with her. But I would move out. I'm not going to get a divorce. I would move out. I don't want to be in the same house with someone so down in their thing, in the pit of their heart, is willing to die or kill for a nasty, insane nation that don't give a damn about you. And so I'm with, we decided we're going to have a march to stop the one guy's up for the death penalty. All three of them got, but this guy's ready to go. So called Martin Luther King, and they got a strong movement against the death penalty in Texas. So we hooked up with them, came to Houston, and met with Bird's son. And we said, this is what we would like. And where were you the night you got the word that your father had been murdered? See, he was in Camp Lejeune. He was in the Marines. Basic training. Okay, what happened? Well, I came home and for the funeral. Okay, what happened after that? Then I went back to Camp Lejeune. Okay, so now let me get this right. Where you going? They ain't lynch your daddy. Where you coming from? Did lynch your daddy. You came back from the funeral. Now they trained you to be a killer. See, they ain't never pretended to recruit nonviolent Negroes. They trained you to be a killer. So you came home, didn't bring your gun, went back, and was willing to go around the world and kill folks for America. Okay? All right, so here's what we ask you to do. We say killing is wrong, and the death penalty is wrong. And we'd like, we're going to have us a 24-hour fast in front of the jail and prayer vigil. We'd like to, and he did. And we got to know him. A brother named Jason, now they've done a movie about it, of that movement. And so there's a lot of things you can do, but I wonder what changed you. What did you know there were Negroes bringing German prisoners back to put in the POW camps? I want y'all to hear this good. They had all the POW camps in the South. You know, the northern white folks misused southern white folks so bad. You know, have you ever asked yourself, how come they never gave the South a Mayo Clinic? How come they never gave you a stock market? How come you never had a Harvard or a Yale or MIT? You know damn good and well, if you go to the University of Mississippi or if you go to Vanderbilt Medical School and your brother goes to sister go to Harvard or Yale Medical School, their degree is worth more than yours. Are you crazy? They never gave the South nothing. But a black person to play with, and that day is over. I mean, that day is over. You see this by this show. There was a time you would kill a black person, a cop, and say, girl, Louise, your son's lucky. Just thank God both of them wasn't there. Huh? Mm-hmm. And so consequently, when you look at these black soldiers coming back to America, to the South, with the white, you had black Negroes guarding them, and white MPs guarded. When them troop planes pulled up on their way to the camp and stopped, those white German prisoners was able to get off the train and go into the front of the restaurant, and the Negro soldiers that guarding them had to stand outside, put their order in, and they pitch their food to them.
Let's go to the phone line. Can we take one call?
Yeah,
We're down our last few minutes. Area code 810. Good afternoon. You're on Center Stage.
Hey, how you doing? My name is Raymond Hall. I'm calling from Flint, Michigan, and I just want to tell you, like, you're one of the greatest heroes in my life, Mr. Gregory. But the one thing I wanted to say after I just heard you talk, what made me call in, is that when I was a youth, going to Northern High School in 1981, I'm 48 years old, and it was on an 8-track tape that I got from my mother's boyfriend, and you said, if a guy can't protect me from a bunch of racist, redneck, mafia people, you had it on an 8-track tape that I heard, then, hey, I don't even want to be with God. So the way I tell the people in Paris, hey, stand up. If God can't protect you from a bunch of racist people or whatever, then, hey, there's no reason to believe anymore. You know what I'm saying? You can stand up and do anything in your life. And I carry that to myself to this day at 48 years old.
Let me kind of correct that for you. That was my voice on the tape, right?
Right.
Okay, let me tell you what I said. I said, if the God I pray to can't protect me from a bunch of ignorant, redneck, nigger-hating, white, Ku Klux Klaners, then I'll be the first one to say I'm praying to the wrong thing and I'll help y'all pull the trigger. That's my example.
That's right. That's what I just wanted to say. And I'm glad to hear it again. I bless you to everything you do. That's why you're still here today, because I know you have no fear. So that's all I wanted to call in and say that to you.
Thank you, caller. Okay.
All right.
Okay, Ms. Gregory, but I'm sorry. Repeat that one more time. If the God you serve, what? If the God you pray to.
I pray to every day. Can't protect me against filth. Then I'll be the first one to admit that I'm praying to the wrong thing. And then I will help you pull the trigger.
Oh.
Okay? That's how I feel about my God.
Oh. Next week, y'all, we're talking to Paris, Texas, and Gregory says y'all can't be scared. Y'all, if y'all soldiers, y'all can't be scared down there. There's several of them, Mr. Gregory, that's going to come on next week and tell their stories, one after another, about the injustices that they experienced going through the Lamar County District Attorney's Office. I mean, just railroading, wrongful convictions, I don't know what you call that down there. It's just injustice run amok. I mean, and you wouldn't think it would be coming out of the DA's office, but it has been. And so we're going to talk right now. We're up to about five that's going to talk to us. And we hope the number grows before next weekend. And they're one by one going to tell their stories of how they've experienced injustice going through the system down there in Harris, Texas. And so
what you do, you put that on your internet and send it all over the world.
Yes.
That's what's called turning lights on the roaches.
Yes. And we're going to do that. I mean, absolutely, because I think it needs some lights turned on down there and let the world know exactly what's going on in Paris, Texas. And we're excited about coming into Paris and talking to the folks down there about what's going on, and hopefully it will help to get y'all some responses from the Justice Department, Eric Holder, and I think the Attorney General, Greg Abbott, to come down there and investigate exactly what's happening in Paris, Texas. We'd like to say to Mr. Dick Gregory, thank him so much for being with us again today. He's always a pleasure. He's a friend. We call him a friend here at Center Stage. So thank you, Mr. Gregory, for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
To remind you that the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage or the host. And again, a reminder that March 26th, next Saturday, from 3 to 5 p.m., we will be speaking with the citizens of Paris that have had wrongful convictions under the Lamar County District Attorney, Gary Young. And we are hoping that they all come forward. But right now we're up to five, and we hope that number grows by next week. Also, follow me on
Twitter. It will.
Say what, Mr. Gregory?
It said it will.
It will.
It will grow.
Follow me on Twitter.
Can I say one more thing?
Yes, sir.
Let me hear your disclaimer again. You said the views of what?
The views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage or the host.
When I get my radio station, you know what my disclaimer is going to be?
What is it going to say?
The views and everything you heard on there is views of the owner, and if it wasn't my views, they wouldn't be on here. Now, if y'all want to go someplace else, go someplace else. Matter of fact, I got some radio station numbers I'll give you.
Okay.
Thank you, y'all.
Remember, an injustice anywhere threatens justice everywhere. That's MLK. Thank you again, Dick Gregory, for being with us today. We got to get out of here, y'all. But thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.